Osho. Come Follow Yourself, Volume 3. Reflections on Jesus of Nazareth. Given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 3.
Bhagwan, when Jesus came into the coasts of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, saying, Whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am? And they said, Some say that thou art John the Baptist, some Elias, and others Jeremias, or one of the prophets. He saith unto them, But whom say ye that I am? And Simon Peter answered and said, Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus answered and said unto him, Blessed art thou, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven. And I say also unto thee, that thou art Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. And I will give unto thee the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. Then charged he his disciples that they should tell no man that he was Jesus the Christ.
Once it happened, Aesop, the greatest master of storytelling, was going out of Athens. He met a man who was coming from Argos. They talked. The man from Argos asked Aesop, You are coming from Athens. Please tell me something about the people there. What manner of men they are. How they are like. Aesop asked the man, First you tell me, what type of people are there in Argos? The man said, Very disgusting, nauseating. Violent. Quarrelsome, and all these qualities flashed on the face of the man. Aesop said, I am sorry, you will find the people of Athens just the same. Later on, he met another man who was also from Argos. And he also asked the same question, that you are coming from Athens and you have lived your whole life there. What manner of men they are there, how they are like. And Aesop again asked, First tell me, what manner of men are there in Argos? And the man became aflamed with nostalgia of a very loving memory of the people of Argos. His face shined and he said, Very pleasant, friendly, kind and good neighbors. Aesop said, I am happy to tell you you will find the people of Athens just the same. This story is tremendously beautiful. It says a very basic truth about man. Wherever you go, you will always find yourself. Wherever you look, you will always encounter yourself. The whole world is nothing but a mirror, and all relationships are mirrors. And again you encounter yourself, and again you misunderstand. You never realize the point that it is your own face that you have looked at, that it is your own mood that you have come across. Why I start with this story of Aesop? For a very basic reason. You can recognize Jesus only if you have recognized something of the beyond within yourself, otherwise not. You can recognize Buddha only if a part of you has become like Buddha. Otherwise, you cannot recognize. You cannot recognize that which has not happened to you. If you are dark, only darkness can be recognized. If you are light, then you become capable to recognize light. Your eyes can see light because they are part of the sun. Because something within you has become of the nature of light. A deep transformation has happened within you. Only then it is possible to recognize a Jesus, a Buddha, a Krishna, a Muhammad. Otherwise you will misunderstand them. And you will think that you have understood them. And it will be nothing but your own reflection. It will be nothing but your own echoes. It is your own voice that you have heard coming from them. It is your own face that you have looked into their mirror. So before you can understand Jesus, you have to understand yourself. Before you can have the vision that Jesus has, something, at least something of the same vision has to be allowed within you. These sutras are very significant. When Jesus came into the coast of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, saying, "Whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" Why he asked this? The people were saying all sorts of things about him. The people have always been gossipy. They feed on rumors. And they go on expressing their opinions without knowing what they are doing. Have you watched the same tendency in you? If you watch and observe, it will drop. And it is one of the basic requirements. If you want to know truth ever, you have to drop all gossiping. If you want to know what truth is, you have to stop making opinions without knowing anything. It is such a foolish attitude. You don't know anything about yourself. But if you come across a Jesus, you immediately create an opinion about him. Have you ever thought about it, what you are doing? You go on judging, not knowing anything about even yourself, which is the nearest point of consciousness to you. Who is more close to you than yourself? And you have not known even that Jesus is far away from you. Stop rumoring, because those rumors will cloud your eyes. Those rumors, those opinions will destroy your perception, your clarity. Why Jesus asks what people are saying about him? Whenever a man like Jesus happens, the whole world is agog with rumors. People go on talking about him. Sometimes I have come across people. Once it happened, I was traveling and I had another passenger in my compartment, only two persons, I and he. He was reading a book, so I asked him. He was reading one of my books, but he didn't know me, and he started saying things about me. And I asked him, "Are you certain?" He said, "Absolutely certain." "Have you seen this man you are talking about?" He said, "Yes, not only seen. We have been class fellows." Once you utter a lie, you have to utter many more lies. I told the man that I'm the man you are talking about. He laughed. He said, "You are joking." He won't believe me. Whenever a man like Jesus is there, 1,001 rumors spread. People talk all sorts of things. Why they talk? To show that they know. There is a story of Gogol, the Russian master. He says, in a small town there was a very simple man, and people used to think about him that he is an idiot. A sage visited the town, and the idiot came to the sage and asked, "I am in constant trouble. The whole town thinks that I am an idiot. And before I have said anything, people start laughing. Before even I have said anything. So I cannot say a single word. I am so afraid. I cannot move in the society. Because wherever I go, people ridicule me. You are a wise man. Help me. Give me some clue how I can protect myself. My whole life is destroyed." The sage said something into his ear. He said, "Only do one thing. Whenever somebody is saying something, immediately deny it, contradict it. Negate it. Whatsoever it is, you don't be bothered. Somebody is saying, 'Look, how beautiful is the moon.' Immediately say, 'Who says? Prove.'" and nobody can prove. Somebody says that Buddha or Christ are enlightened people. Immediately deny, contradict. That who says, what is enlightenment? All nonsense, rubbish. The simple man said, but I may not be able to prove that it is rubbish. The old says, sir, you need not worry. Nobody will ask you. They will be trying to prove whatsoever they are saying. Never say anything positively. Then you will never be in trouble. Just negate. Somebody says God exists, say no. Where is God? Proof. And the man tried the trick. After 7 days, the whole town was simply surprised. And people started saying that we never knew that this man is so wise. If you want to look wise, you have to utter nonsense. And the best way is to deny, to say no. Because life is such a mystery that nothing can be proved. If somebody says, look, this woman is so beautiful, say, who says? What is there? Why you call her beautiful? I don't see anything. Nobody can prove. All the poets of the world can stand against you, but you are going to win. Because things are so mysterious, they cannot be proved. They cannot be reduced to an argument. Nobody wants to feel that he does not know. If you say that yes, Jesus is enlightened, it will be difficult to prove. Almost impossible. 20 centuries of constant argument has not proved anything. Jesus remains as mysterious, as riddlesome as he was. 20 centuries of theology, constant argument, elaboration, explanation, analysis, interpretation, nothing has been proved. Jesus remains as mysterious as he ever was, maybe even more, because he is lost in these explanations. You cannot prove that Jesus is enlightened, because enlightenment is something beyond the mind. You have to taste it. You cannot talk about it. And when you taste it, you become silent. But if you want to say that he is nothing, nobody, you can prove. That is simply very easy. So people were saying many things, contradicting, negating, arguing that this man, he is nothing. When Jesus came into the coast of Caesarea Philippi, he asked the disciples, saying, whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am? What people are saying about me? And they said, some say that thou art John the Baptist, some Elias, and others Jeremias, are one of the prophets. This happens always. People have only one criterion, and that is of the past. And a man like Jesus is of the present. He is not from the past. He does not belong to any tradition. He cannot belong. A man like Jesus is a rebellion. He cannot be part of any tradition. But the ordinary human mind has no other criterions. At the most, you can think about the past. You can say, maybe he is John the Baptist, or Elias, or Ezekiel, or Jeremiah, or the old past prophets. When those prophets were present, you never understood them. You never looked into them direct and immediate. You never encountered them. Because to encounter them is a great daring. There is no other courage more dangerous than to encounter a man who has known, because he is death-like. He is an infinite abyss. If you look into Jeremiah or Ezekiel or Elias, you are looking into a bottomless abyss. You will start shaking and trembling, and you will start perspiring, and you will be afraid. One step and you can be lost forever, and you cannot come back again. Jesus, Buddha and Krishna, they are absolute emptinesses. Their ego has disappeared. They are just vast spaces of being. No boundaries. No maps. The territory is uncharted. To look into it, you will lose balance. The very earth below your feet will disappear. You will find yourself falling and falling and falling. And the falling is endless. So people never look directly. When Jesus is there, they talk about John. They talk about Elias, they talk about Ezekiel, they talk about Jeremiah, they talk about Abraham, Moses. They can talk of the whole past, but they will not look in this man who is right now here. And the same they have been doing to Moses, to Abraham, and to everybody. When Moses is there, they will not encounter him. That is too dangerous and risky. Then they will talk of somebody else. The disciples said, some say that thou art John the Baptist, some Elias, and others Jeremias are one of the prophets. Few things to be understood. Whenever a Jesus happens, he is absolutely fresh and virgin. He does not come from the past. He comes from above. That is the Hindu meaning of avatar. He descends. He is not part of the chain. He is not horizontal. He is vertical. Whenever you will become alert and aware, immediately your whole being turns, then you are no more horizontal, suddenly you find yourself vertical. As if a man is lying down and fast asleep, he is horizontal. Sleep is horizontal. It is very difficult to stand and sleep. You have to lie down. That is the most comfortable pose. If you try to sleep standing up, it will be almost impossible. Sleep is horizontal. Unconsciousness is horizontal. But when a man awakes, he sits, he stands up, he becomes horizontal. Take it symbolically. The same happens in the inner world. When a man is unconscious, unaware, he is horizontal. His consciousness is horizontal. When he becomes alert, aware, conscious, he stands. Then the consciousness becomes vertical. And this is the meaning of Christian cross. Two lines, one horizontal, one vertical. The horizontal line is of unconsciousness, and the vertical line is of consciousness. The horizontal line you can call of matter, the vertical of consciousness. The horizontal line, the world, the Maya, and the vertical, the gods, the Brahma. Cross is very, very significant and multidimensional. You must have seen Jesus on the cross. Have you observed that his hands are on the horizontal line and his whole body on the vertical? Why? Because doing is horizontal and being is vertical. Hands are just representatives of doing. Whatsoever you do with matter. Whatsoever you do becomes part of the world. Whatsoever you do moves into history. Whatsoever you do becomes part of time. It becomes a horizontal. But whatsoever you are, the pure being, it is not part of the world. It may be in the world, but it is not of the world. It penetrates the world. That's why Hindus have given it a beautiful name, avatar. It comes down from above. It penetrates like a ray of light into darkness. The ray may be in the darkness, but it is not of the darkness. It comes from above. Zen says that by doing, you cannot attain. Because whatsoever you will do, will move outwards. That's why Zen says even meditation is not to be done. One has to be meditative. Prayer cannot be done. One has to be prayerful. Love cannot be done. One has to be loving. The difference is between doing and being. When you are loving, it is part of the vertical. When you are meditative, it is part of the vertical. When you start meditating, it becomes horizontal. All effort, all doing has to cease. That is the meaning of the Jesus hand on the horizontal line. And the whole except the hands is on the vertical. Accept what you do. All your being is part of God. Whatsoever you do is part of the world. But only hands are seen. If I don't do anything, I will become invisible. You will not be able to see me. Not that you will not see me, but you will not recognize. If I don't do anything, I will be as if I am not. Because you know only one criterion. something should be done. That's why in your books of histories, Buddhas are just footnotes, not more than that. That too seems to be a concession. Alexanders, Napoleons, they make history. Buddhas, just footnotes. You are so kind towards them that you allow them a small space, few lines. But they don't become the main part of history, because you ask what they have done. And if Buddha is there and Jesus is there, that too because something they have done. Maybe not much, but something. There have been Buddhas which have completely disappeared. They have not even left a ripple in the history. Buddha himself talks about 24 Buddhas who preceded him. History does not know anything about them. They may have been absolutely silent people, people of being. Nothing is known about them, because how you should know if they don't do anything? Gundas are known, hooligans, sages become invisible. Because unless you do something, you don't leave a trace. The more you do, the more the horizontal line receives you. The more you are, you disappear. You only see hands, you don't see anything else. The disciples said that people think that you are incarnation of John the Baptist or Elias or Jeremiah. They think about you in terms of others of the past, and that is where you miss. A man like Jesus is absolutely fresh. He does not come from the past. He has no history. In fact, he has no autobiography. He is so fresh, like a dewdrop, so fresh, just the fresh morning. It has nothing to do with the past. But then you will have to face him. Then you will have to look directly. People come to me. One man came who is a follower of Ramakrishna. He said, I see Ramakrishna in you. Why? Can't you see me directly? Why I see Ramakrishna in me? And I know if this man was to face Ramakrishna, he will see Ram or Krishna in him, but not Ramakrishna. Again, past. With the past, you feel at ease because it is dead. With dead gods, you feel very at ease and comfortable because they cannot change you. And you can manipulate them. You can put your dead gods anywhere you like. They will not even say that I don't like this place. They cannot say anything. They cannot assert. They are not there. It is good, comfortably good, conveniently good. You can see in Jesus Jeremiah. Jeremiah himself was a very dangerous man. You miss Jeremiah then you were seeing Moses in him. Now Jesus comes. By the time Jeremiah is dead, he has become a statue, a fossil. Now his words don't carry any meaning to you. You have listened to them so much. They have lost significance. Now you want to see that fossil in Jesus. Why can't you see the truth that is facing you? Why you go on avoiding? Why you look sideways? Why can't you be immediate? Why you can't see that which is? Why you are obsessed with the past and go on translating the present into the past? If I say something, immediately your mind starts translating it into past. You don't listen to me. You listen to your translations. I say something, the Hindu immediately translates it. And he says, yes, this is what Krishna says in Gita. The Mohammedan translates it immediately, yes, this is what Muhammad says in Quran. Why can't you listen to me? What is the need of bringing Quran and Gita in? No, there is some trick of the mind. If you bring Gita in, you can avoid me. Then the Gita becomes the barrier. Then you are protected behind a dead Gita. Then you need not listen to the sound that is happening this moment. Then your ears are filled with the past, your eyes filled with dust, your being afraid is defending itself. This is your armor, the Gita, the Quran, the Vedas, the Talmud. This is your armor. You look behind the scriptures. That is a way of not looking. If you want to look really, drop all the scriptures. Because truth is always fresh and virgin. It has nothing to do with the past. Some say the Dawud, John the Baptist, some Elias and others, Jeremiah, are one of the prophets, but nobody looks at you. There are two types of people who are against. They will say, you are nothing, just a pretender, a deception, a deceiver. Then those who are not against, they will say, you represent, you are an incarnation of Krishna, Buddha, Jeremiah, Moses. Both are avoiding you, one by denying, one by accepting, but not looking at you. Not only enemies are against, even sometimes followers are against. Not only enemies trying to escape, even the friends. Maybe the friend is more cunning. Because the enemy simply says no. The friend says yes, but says in such a way that it ultimately means no. The friend is more cunning. There is only one way to see Jesus, and that is to see him as he is directly. No scriptures are needed to interpret him. He has to be seen untranslated. He has to be seen direct. He has to be faced and encountered. Eye to eye, heart to heart. Dangerous it is, I know, risky, because you will never be the same again once you encounter the reality that which is. the truth. He said unto them, but whom say ye that I am? Leave people aside. Now he asks his own disciples, what do you think? Whom say ye that I am? Only one disciple spoke. The 11 remained silent. Nothing is said about them. They must have been puzzled. What to say? Because whenever you say to Jesus that you are Jeremiah, you think you are praising him. You are condemning. You are rejecting. You are not explaining, you are explaining him away. And Simon Peter answered and said, only one, a very innocent man. Just the other day, we were talking about his story. The man of little faith. But at least little faith was in him. And even if there is a little faith, it can grow. The mustard seed can become a big plant, a big bush. And birds of heaven can shelter in it. Yes, Peter was a man of little faith, but even a little faith is like a spark. It can burn the whole forest. The spark is never little. Even a little spark has tremendous energy. Once it starts functioning. And Simon Peter answered and said, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. Very significant words. Try to understand them. Thou art the Christ. What this word Christ means? It has nothing to do with Jesus. Buddha is also a Christ. Krishna is also a Christ. And there is every possibility that the word Christ comes from Krishna. In Bengali, Krishna is called Christo. There is every possibility that Christ is a form of the same root, Krishna. What Krishna means? The word means that which attracts. Krishna is one who has become capable of attracting the divine in him. Christ is also the same. It means the drop has become capable of attracting the ocean in him. Christ is a meeting point of the drop with the ocean, of the finite with the infinite, of the horizontal with the vertical. Where the horizontal and the vertical meet, that point of meeting is Christ. When Simon Peter said, thou art the Christ. This is what he meant. He said, in you I can see the finite and the infinite meeting. In you I can see the man of, the Son of Man and the Son of God meeting. In you I can see boundaries dissolving, matter and no matter meeting. In you I can see time and eternity meeting, life and death meeting. That is the meaning of Christ, where the opposites meet and become one. Ordinarily, the whole life is divided in opposites, day and night, summer and winter, morning and evening, birth and death. The point of Christ is the meeting of the opposites, where opposites become complementary and are no more opposites. Christ is a paradox. Christ is a very irrational, illogical point. If you try to understand Christ by logic, you will miss. You will have to find some other logic. They call it the logic by the side, not on the main road. The main road is possessed by Aristotle. He dominates there. If you want to understand Christ, you will have to get down some bypath, but not on the main roads. No, you will never meet Christ on the super highway that is possessed by the logicians, the professors, the thinkers, the philosophers. You will have to get down, run into wilderness. I am reminded of an old story. It happened, a merchant, a very old man, was under a heavy debt, and the money lender was a very dangerous man. The money lender came to the merchant's house. It must have been a morning like this. A winter morning, the merchant was sitting outside in his small garden. The garden where he was sitting was paved with white and black pebbles. His young and beautiful daughter was also sitting by the side. The moneylender had come threaten the man that if he is not going to pay the money within a certain limit of time, he will be thrown into imprisonment for 20 years at least. But he softened a little by looking at the beautiful girl. He proposed. He said, "I know that you cannot pay your debts, and I know that legally you can be thrown at least for 20 years imprisonment. That will be end of your life. You are almost 70. But I am kind. And I have always been kind to you. I will give you an opportunity. And this is my proposal, that I will take two pebbles, one black and one white, and put them in my bag. And then your daughter has to take one pebble out of the bag. If she takes the white pebble out, you are freed of your debt, and nothing happens to your daughter. If she takes the black pebble out, then you are freed from your debt, but then your daughter will have to marry me." Very reluctantly, they agreed, the father and daughter, because there was no other possibility. The moneylender took two pebbles. When he was taking two pebbles, the old merchant could not see. He was almost filled with tears. But the sharp eyes of the young girl could see that he has taken two black pebbles. Now, ordinary logic fails. What to do? Two black people in the bag. The obvious thing to do is to expose the fraud, but then he will be annoyed and he will take revenge and the father will be thrown into jail immediately. That doesn't seem to be the right way to annoy him. Then what to do? Because whatsoever she does, a black people will be coming out. Logic fails. In the West, there is one logician, a new type of logician. He calls his logic lateral. His name is De Bono. He quotes this story again and again. And he says that wherever he quotes this story, he inquires people, now what to do? And he said only once a woman stood and she answered the right thing. But she said at the same time that my husband thinks that I am illogical. What happened? What the girl did? She didn't expose. She didn't argue about the fact that he has taken two black peoples. She withdrew one people out of the bag, fumbled, dropped the people on the path. It was lost. There were many peoples and it could not be recognized. Profoundly, she wanted to be excused, forgiven. And then she suggested a solution that look at the other people which is left inside. If it is black, then the one that I have withdrawn must have been white. If it is white, then the other was black. And the old moneylender could not do anything. The failure was absolute. This is logic by the side. It is not on the path. It is illogical. It is literal. You don't go directly, zigzag. If you want to understand Jesus, you will have to go a little zigzag. He is a paradox. That is the meaning of Christ. In him, the opposites meet. That's why he goes on calling himself Son of Man and at the same time Son of God. Anybody who thinks logically will say that you can say only one thing, not two together. Either you are Son of Man, then finished. Then don't say that you are Son of God. Or you are Son of God, then don't say that you are Son of Man. But he says both. He means both. And he is both. In fact, everybody is both. But you have not looked at yourself. And your mind is caught up in logical patterns. So whatsoever is illogical within you, whatsoever is wild within you, you don't look at it. You simply deny it. You suppress it. That's how unconscious mind is created. You have only one mind. Jesus has one mind. I have one mind. You also have one mind, but you have divided it in two. You have created a boundary. A small space of the mind you call mind and the remaining you have denied. That denied part has become the unconscious. And it takes revenge. It goes on fighting with you. You are a split. All humanity is schizophrenic. Only rarely sometimes there is a man who is not schizophrenic, who is integrated and one. Jesus is one. That is the meaning of Christ. In Him, the infinite and the finite meet. This simple man, Simon, also called Peter, answered and said, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." What does this Peter mean when he says Son of the living God? Is there a God who is dead? Yes. Not only is there a God, there are 1,001 gods which are dead. The whole past is dead. If you cling to the past, you cling to dead gods. The living God is always here now. Because God has only one time, and that is present. He has no past, no future. People believe in past gods, and people also believe in future gods. Jews who crucified Jesus, they believed in the past incarnations, Moses, Abraham, Ezekiel, all the prophets, and they also believed in a Messiah who is to come in future. And Jesus was there. The future had already come, and the past was already fulfilled in Him. The past and the future were meeting in Him, the paradox, the Christ, but they won't see. They are still waiting for a future Messiah to come. Remember, God is never in the past. Past is already dead. And God cannot be dead. So all past gods are dead gods. That means they are not there. They are only in your memory. And there is no future for God. For God, only present exists. From that altitude, from that peak, there is no future. There is only present. Have you heard about the scientific discovery of the fact that if a watch moves as fast as light, it stops. If a watch is moved as fast as light, it stops. It is a beautiful phenomenon. Time stops itself. And all scriptures say God is light. At that speed, time stops. There is no past, no future, only the present. The hands of the clock don't move. They remain, they always remain at the same point. There is no future God, there is no past God, there is only God as life here now. That is the meaning, the Son of the living God. Christians have been misinterpreting it. They say the God of the Hindus is dead. The God of the Jews is dead. The God of the Mohammedans is dead. Only the Christian God is alive. They have been misinterpreting the whole thing. No. No, Christian's God is also dead. Past is dead. Whatsoever becomes past is dead. And whatsoever is part of future is not yet born. God is. Isness is God. Present, presence, absolute presence here now. And Jesus answered and said unto him, Blessed art thou, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven. Jesus said, Blessed art thou, Simon. You are blessed. Because for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee. Because whatsoever you have seen cannot be seen by the eyes of flesh. Whatsoever you have seen cannot be seen by you. It is possible only when God reveals it to you. It is possible only when the infinite descends in you, when the grace happens. You cannot realize God because you are the barrier. When you are not there, God realizes himself in you. Blessed art thou, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven. Once Alexander asked Diogenes that, what do you think about God? Diogenes said, it does not matter what I think about God. The only thing that matters is what God thinks about me. Absolutely true. It does not matter what you think about God. How can it matter? The only thing that matters is what God thinks about you. Your philosophy, your thinking, your doctrines, your creeds are useless. All rubbish. Rot. Be silent. You need not think about God. When thinking disappears, God starts thinking about you, caring about you, fulfilling you. He comes, becomes a guest. And I say unto thee that thou art Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church. And the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. The man of little faith, but at least of faith, Jesus says, I will build my church upon your rock. And the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. Jesus gathered very simple people around him. He was a great master who could see deeply into the possibilities and potentialities. It is said of Michelangelo that once he came across a great marble rock which was discarded by the builders. He asked the builders, why you have discarded this rock? They said, it is useless. Michelangelo laughed and he said, who told you it is useless? I can already see an angel waiting to be released in this rock. An angel imprisoned. An imprisoned splendor. Send it to my studio. The angel needs a little help. It is not useless. No man is useless. Unless you have decided to remain useless. No man is useless. If you allow, as the marble allows, the artist, the sculptor, to transform it, so that the imprisoned splendor can be released. Faith, even a little faith that will do, is needed. A little trust is needed, and Christ can release in Simon something which can become the rock for his church, for his family, for his community, for those people who are going to love him and follow him. And I will give unto thee the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. Then charged he his disciples that they should tell no man that he was Jesus the Christ. The keys of heaven. He says, I will give you the keys of heaven. And whosoever is released on earth by those keys will remain released in heaven. Whosoever is freed on the earth will be free in heaven also. Because whatsoever happens on the earth is going to happen in heaven also. Wherever you are right now, you will be there. And Jesus says, I will give you keys. What keys? There is only one key, in fact. And the key is how to commit an ego suicide. How to commit the murder of the self. How to become a no-self. How to be, and at the same time, without the I. That's the only key. And all other keys are just supportive. All other keys are just supports for the main and basic thing. How to be egoless. And the door opens. It is said, I have heard a story, that when Jesus died and reached heaven on the gate, the angel Gabriel met him and asked, what plans you have, so that the work that you have started can be continued on earth. Jesus said, I have left 12 men and few women who are going to spread my message till it reaches to the every heart, to the every mind on the earth. The angel said, and if they fail you, have you made other plans also? Jesus smiled and said, I am counting on them. I have no other plan. Counting on love, counting on these simple villagers, counting on them, no other plan. There cannot be. Meditation is the key. Egolessness is the key. And love is the only plan to spread it all over the earth. I am also counting on you, on your love, on your trust, on your courage. I am also giving you the key. Don't only use it for yourself. First use it for yourself, then spread the message. Because everybody is imprisoned in a rock, and everybody needs to be released. Then charged he his disciples that they should tell no man that he was Jesus the Christ. Why? Because these things are revealed in trust and cannot be told to others. These things are revealed in love. You call me Bhagwan. That is because of your love it can be revealed to you. When you talk to others, don't tell it to them. That will offend them. And that will be pointless. And they will start arguing about it. You love me. Through your love you have seen something which they cannot see unless they also love. Jesus said, don't tell them. You have realized the truth. You have seen the vertical in me, but don't go on telling it to others. They will not understand. They will misunderstand. They will be offended. Because that which is known through love can only be understood through love. Enough for today.